Hey everybody, I'm Jeff, and this is Casual Chats in a Parallel Universe. My dad and I have been having daily conversations about family, history, life lessons, movies, news, music, and more. Now we are sharing these chats with you. So welcome to our podcast, and we hope you enjoy.
When I was driving over, I was thinking of maybe giving Jacksonville a little more love.
Oh.
Yeah.
We're going to revisit.
Yeah, do a little, you know, a little segue from, say, the 50s, you know, forward and talking about Jacksonville as
your
a city.
You mean not the 1950s?
Yeah, the 50s, starting in the 50s.
Oh.
Because Jacksonville is, when you think about it, Jacksonville really was a real microcosm of what was going on in the country, not only from the civil rights standpoint, but, you know, I mean, even from the sexual revolution, standpoint.
No,
I mean, the gay rights standpoint. I mean, there was a lot. It was a hotbed. Not necessarily like some other locations were, because I think Jacksonville was more, I don't know, slow developing.
Always.
It always lagged behind, but
as do most southern.
Well, I mean,
as progressive.
Yeah, but it wasn't. You know, I think there was a reason why things happened in Mississippi, because Mississippi was a bad place.
Right.
Things were really bad there.
Sure.
Whereas opposed, Jacksonville was bad, but it wasn't anywhere near what it was.
It had not gotten to a boil. It was more of a simmer. Yeah.
Because I think, after I thought about it for a while, it really wasn't fair in some ways for me to call it, you know, nothing but a big hick town. You know, I mean, there was, I have very fond memories of, you know, where I went to school.
I mean, we're already going down the road. Let's get into it. I feel like our listeners, you know, we've had some feedback from our listeners that, you know, it would be nice to hear maybe a little love letter to Jayville, which, look, I mean, I think you and I both have somewhat similar feelings about Jacksonville, and it is kind of a love-hate relationship even for myself, there were times there that I were absolutely fantastic times. Yeah. And but on the other hand, you know, growing up, I couldn't wait to get the hell out of there.
Yeah.
You know, and some of that just didn't have to do with Jacksonville. Some of that just had to do with me. You know, and my need to, you know, again, get going on an adventure.
Right.
And get, you know, being born and raised somewhere, you know, you run over the same ground enough times, you're like, gosh, you know, I'd really like to try something new, you know? And so, and Jacksonville was, as you were saying, it was slow. So it wasn't like the ground was really changing a whole lot there.
It took long. It took a long time, I think, too. You know, because Jacksonville was, you know, if you look at because I obviously being born in 1944, my real memories of Jacksonville are, you know, really come in the 50s.
Right.
So, but Jacksonville was really, you know, it was deep south. You know, there were absolutely full and complete segregation.
Sure.
You know, the education system was separate but equal, quote unquote, which of course was ridiculous. There was no equal about anything. The educational facilities, I never met a black person in grammar school, high school.
Really?
Never. There was not a single black person. I'm not even certain I had any Asian kids I don't even have a recollection of an Asian child there was a big Syrian population in Jacksonville. You know, there was a reasonably large, relatively large Jewish community. There was almost an equivalent Middle Eastern community, mainly made up of Syrian families and Lebanese families. So it was from the standpoint.
But I'm sure there was and still is a large black population in Jacksonville.
You
at that time you weren't fraternizing.
I mean, come on. There was. I met black people in that because my dad was in the construction business, running a contracting business. Right. So he obviously, most of the subcontractors were black guys that, you know, kind of had their own small business. So there'd be like and usually these guys were like, when I say a subcontractor, they would be like a sub general contractor. So right. My dad would go out and sell a job, like adding on a bathroom, right, a full bathroom onto a house. And most of the customers were black families because in Jacksonville, when they ran sanitary sewers into a new section of the black community, because that's the way things would go.
Right.
Most of the black area of town did not have sanitary sewers. Everything was either on septic tank, possibly, but most of the time it's just outhouses.
Oh, wow.
So the city would go in and run a sanitary sewer down a street, and they would require the family to hook up, to put in a bathroom. So it was a perfect opportunity, you know, for these construction companies to go in and sell these families and sell them on either, you know, adding a bedroom on with a bath or just a bath, whatever the deal was. So the subcontractor, you know, my dad's company would go in and sell the job, and they would kind of know in the back of their mind how much it was going to cost.
Right.
So they'd sell whatever a bathroom might cost, whatever that might be, say, I don't know, $3,500, $5,000.
At the time.
At the time, it was you know, not as much money, obviously, as it is today. So then my dad or the sales guy would sit down with this black subcontractor and say, okay, you know, how much are you going to charge me to put in this bath?
Right.
And so he knows he sold the job for $5,000. So he's trying to get the guy to do it for $800.
Right.
You know, and so there was the back and forth of that. So the margins on they usually would get these guys bidding against each other, and so they could get the job done really ultra cheap.
As cheap as possible.
Yeah. And make, quite frankly, make a very nice piece of change, which was split between the sales guy and my dad's company,
sure,
that he owned. But in any event, so that was my relation to, was meeting these, because I would go to work with my dad and I'd see his interplay between him and the black subcontractors, and he would even have them over to the house. I mean, we'd, you know, he'd have a drink with them, and so I got a chance to meet him and understand, you know, what was going on. But it was clear even to me at 10 years old, you know, say 1954, that these people were second-class people. You know, they were looked at as second-class people.
Right.
Period, full stop.
But that's
the way they were treated.
Right.
That they were clearly treated as second-class people. At the same time, when you look at the city and the way the city treated the black community, you understand that during that period of time, that's when everything was separate. So there were colored, I mean, that's the way they were designated.
Yes, quote.
Colored, yes. Water fountains.
Right.
Colored bathrooms, so the public facilities were segregated.
Right.
fully and completely.
Sure.
And so
it's everything. The buses ran that way.
The buses weren't
how you
they weren't segregated, but they were segregated from the standpoint of the black people had to sit in the back of the bus.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Yeah. But the bus wasn't all black.
Right.
Yeah, you know, there weren't black buses and white buses.
No. Yeah. But I mean, some restaurants wouldn't even serve black people. Some of them would, but they would seat them in a different part of the restaurant.
And I'm sure most people, today watching, documentaries or movies of the period.
Right.
It was clear that, many of the restaurants.
Yes.
Wouldn't serve black people at all.
Right.
So, but during the 50s, as I got older, I can even recall that when the civil rights movement was really kicking into gear, Jacksonville was always lagging, kind of behind. They weren't considered, I think, by the black community, by the movers in the black community. Jacksonville wasn't necessarily one of their key places.
Right.
That being said, they would focus on Jacksonville along with other places, but there were hot spots that they would. But it was.
I know it was large land area wise, but it's still a small town. I'm sure. In the 1950s, the population was probably what, maybe 200,000 people?
Yeah, probably. I guess. I really don't know.
Which is pretty small for the city, especially the size of Jacksonville. I mean, that's a lot of space.
Well, as we discussed, I think Jacksonville was, always the more backward of the large cities. You had Miami, you had Tampa.
Right.
Tampa, St. Pete, Orlando. Although Orlando back in those days was really backwater too. There was obviously Disney wasn't there.
Right.
So it there was all that was there was really the orange industry was there. So it was, picking oranges and the transient labor and that type of thing. So Orlando wasn't that big. So it was.
When did the county and the city merge?
Until the 60s.
Oh, okay. At that time, so Jacksonville was just a smaller part of Duval County. There wasn't actually, and so
yeah, it was, the city limits.
It was broken up into the different areas where it was like San Marco and Mandarin, and I'm sure maybe they weren't really called that at the time, but
they were part. San Marco was within the city limits,
right?
So it was part of Jacksonville, but I think. Like when we moved to San Jose, I think I really don't know, don't recall anyway, where the city limits stopped.
We don't have to get too far in the weeds.
But
it wasn't as large. I mean, cause of course when I was growing up, to get from one side of Jacksonville to the other, it'd take you like an hour. From somewhere, yeah. From what you're saying is, or when you grew up, it was a much smaller area. Actually, the city of Jacksonville was in a much smaller area. Oh, yeah.
Because there were what they called the unincorporated areas of Duval County, which was the county, but there was no city. So you were relying on county services like the county sheriff, as opposed to the Jacksonville Police Department.
Sure.
So there was that break.
But even like such things, I mean, you're talking about it now, like water and sewage. I mean, that's usually a city.
Yeah, there was the city area, which was still the downtown area was still more the quote city unquote.
Right.
And then the unincorporated area, was these areas out, and in those cases, the facilities or the utilities were being provided by private companies that were providing sewer or whatever, water treatment, all that stuff. But getting back to what it was like, it was a completely segregated situation of the black. As I said, I never had an opportunity to meet a black person other than these
people that
very limited opportunities with my with the people my dad dealt with.
Right.
And then when I, you know, would work during the summers, you know, I'd work on a carpenter crew or some other business, and you might, you know, you might work with a black carpenter that would be part of the crew, but really, other than that, I certainly didn't have any black friends,
right?
And nor did my parents. You know, it was a completely segregated situation in Jacksonville, and even I think we I can't remember whether we touched on this before, but the community, the Jewish community was in its way was completely segregated, because the country clubs, as an example, were religiously segregated.
Right.
So, you know, like San Jose Country Club, which was...
Well, that's... I was going to ask that. Like, did you run into, you know...
Anti-Semitism?
Yeah, no, I mean, did you run into... And maybe not, because you were often in the bubble of the Jewish community, so you didn't really, you know...
No.
Go, I mean, did the high school you went to had... You know, a pretty...
Well, Mom went to Landon, and Landon was where almost all the... Most of the Jewish families were in that South Jacksonville area that Landon serviced. So, I mean, there was a joke, you know, that when, you know, one of the Jewish holidays rolled around, like Passover, or where the kids...
Rosh Hashanah.
Yeah, Rosh Hashanah, where the kids left school. They basically
shut
Landon down for the day because... there were so many kids out, whereas I didn't go to Landon. I ended up going to DuPont, and DuPont was more out in the country.
Right.
And so it was, you know, although Jewish families were starting to move to that area, it was much, much more the norm, where the Jewish kids were in the vast minority.
Right.
And so things were different.
But you never ran it. You never really ran into.
Nah, not any. I mean, there was a little from my perspective, a little bit of anti-Semitism. But it was, you'd hear something like somebody might say something because they probably heard it at home.
Sure,
and they weren't even sure what it meant.
Right,
you know, like "dirty Jew" or, you know, something like that. But it wasn't. I just don't recall anything where there was anything overt. Like I got beat up. So it, to your point, no, I do not recall anything that was like that.
Right.
But it took a while. I mean, I remember took a while, meaning going back to the segregation situation, there did come a time in Jacksonville where there was a sit-in at Woolworths. And the funny thing was I was there the day that it happened.
Oh, wow.
And I happened to walk in. I was downtown, and there was a Woolworths downtown right at Hemming Park, if you remember where Hemming Park was.
Sure.
And I happened to be downtown. I don't know. I was going to Levy's or something, or Rosenblum's, to look for some clothes. And I walked in to Woolworths and sat down at the lunch counter to order a sandwich, and I looked around and I realized there was nobody sitting at the lunch counter. Was completely empty.
Right.
Except for, I noticed all the way down at the other end of the lunch counter, there were four black kids that were seated at the stool.
Right.
And they were trying to order. I didn't realize it at the time, but they were actually trying to order something. And they wouldn't serve them.
Right.
And so all of a sudden, the whole lunch counter cleared and there was nobody sitting there except for me and these black kids.
Right.
And somebody said to me, "Hey, kid, you better get out of here. There's going to be trouble."
Right.
And so I got up and left.
Somebody that actually...
Oh, it was just somebody standing, you know, behind me, you know, because I realized I'm sitting there all by myself. And somebody said to me, he said, "Hey, kid, you better get up and get out of there. There's..." You say, "Look who's sitting down at the other end of the lunch counter." And right, that's when I realized. Well,
I mean, for our listeners, so what, and even for myself, really. So, I mean, what constitutes a sit-in?
They went in and tried to order, and of course, the lunch counter people said, you know,
and by they, you mean obviously these four
black students. These were young, relatively young kids, right. And maybe they were like 17, 18 years old. I can't recall what was said. It could have gotten really nasty.
Right.
You know, it could have been, we don't serve you people. But I don't know where it was on the spectrum of we don't serve you people or whatever.
Right.
But it was made clear they weren't going to serve them.
Okay.
And everybody that was there decided this was not a good place to be, and they all left the counter. So these kids just sat there. They weren't leaving.
Right.
And they said, we're not leaving.
Until we're
served. And eventually they called the cops. And the cops escorted them out. And that was the end of it. I did kind of hang around to see what would happen. But that was it.
So I envisioned it being more of a large protest. Like I thought like the whole restaurant area was filled with people protesting the fact that they were not willing to serve that wasn't white, basically.
No, I don't recall anything like that in Jacksonville. Now, that doesn't mean it didn't happen.
Right.
But as I said, I think Jacksonville was less of a, you know, a hotbed for protest.
Sure.
I don't recall any, you know, major protests where you ended up with hundreds.
From what you're saying, that was a pivotal point, though.
It was on the news. You know, they picked it up on Channel 4. It was on the news, and it was coordinated. There were other sit-ins in other cities on that same day. So this was all coordinated.
Gotcha.
To try to make this an event,
right?
Like
a nationwide protest.
Sure. I don't know whether it was nationwide, but I think it was certainly in Florida.
Okay,
that's for sure. And it could have been even more organized than that. But and then we also had even in Jacksonville having cross burnings. You know, this is Ku Klux Klan stuff.
Right.
And this was when I was in my teens. And this took place, if you recall, the old drive-in that was at the corner of University Boulevard and Phillips Highway. There was a drive-in movie that was there. Caddy corner to that drive-in movie was a big empty field. And they had a big cross burning there, and this occurred during the times when these protests were going on.
Right.
So it, as I said, I mean, Jacksonville really had.
We're not painting the love letter that I thought we were going.
But at the same time, I mean, there were. I think there was also movement too. I mean, there was Jacksonville didn't lag behind. I mean, it did. There were attempts to try to resolve these issues, and I don't recall whether there was a Rosa Parks
type of
situation that occurred with the city bus system. But the buses were segregated. You know, black people had to sit behind the line in the back of the bus. So I don't recall whether. I don't think
so. When did integration begin?
It was when the schools were integrated. So this would have been, I graduated high school in 62,
right?
And the schools were still segregated at that point. I think when busing, I remember Harold, my brother. Graduated in, 65? I think he graduated in 65. He graduated from Wolfson. But I still think, I don't know, I really don't recall when the busing started in Jacksonville. Were you, I, were you bust? No.
Yes, I was.
You guys were bust.
I was bust from because I went to, you know, public school from first grade on.
Yeah.
And so when I was at San Jose Elementary, that was second grade, I was bused there because that was across town basically right. from where we lived.
And busing had been going on, I think, for a while.
And then I was bused to Pine Forest as well.
Yeah. But that's when there were court cases that had come down that you could not refuse service to somebody in right. in a public, when I say a public place, it was a business that was involved in quote interstate commerce, and if you were even if you were a local restaurant, you couldn't refuse service. I mean, I remember like there was this famous place called Pappy's in St. Augustine, had the greatest fried shrimp in the world. There, they would not serve black people, and if you, they would have there was a standard sign that would be put up in the window saying we reserve the right to refuse service to anyone,
right,
for any reason,
sure,
and that kind of thing was struck down. So pretty much after that court case came down.
In 1954, that's when the Supreme Court issued
right.
its ruling on Brown versus Board of Education.
Board of Education, right.
And so that's when they called for the desegregation of
schools. it was a very, very, very slow
process. Well, especially in the South. I'm sure the South fought tooth and nail that, right. that.
And I think they pushed more. Although this is, I hate to even say it, my memory of the whole thing is hazy. But I thought that there was more of a push on the college campuses than there was at the high school level.
To desegregate or stay segregated?
No, to desegregate.
I mean, that makes more sense. I mean, of course, I would think college campuses are more progressive than...
When mom went to the University of Alabama, so this would have been 1965, I think, that was the year she graduated in 64. So she would have attended Alabama in 64, 65, that was the year that the University of Alabama was desegregated. I think they had four kids. There were four kids that, and that was a huge, if you recall, this was all over, the TV, and they had called out the Alabama National Guard. And
right.
There was a showdown between the governor of Alabama, Bobby Kennedy, as the attorney general of the U.S. And so there was a showdown there that ultimately the governor caved in and they allowed these kids to go to school there. But that's, it was very slow, very step by step, and the numbers of people that were actually integrated, into the student body was very small. And I think that's when, again, busing as a tool, I don't know what year that started in Jacksonville.
I'm kind of Googling to try and right. figure it out, but says basically in 1970 was really when the implementation of a court order to desegregate the Duval County public schools.
Well, that makes sense. My recollection, it was very slow when you think about Brown versus Board of Education in the mid
54. Yeah,
yeah, and here so it took almost over 15 years later. Yeah, it was difficult. I mean, it really, really was difficult, and there was a lot of pushback. I mean, people were trying all kinds of things. And of course, that was also, there was a big move at that point. A lot of private schools were started. A lot of them were religious schools.
Sure.
were started in, during that period of time, so that families that could afford it would pull their kids out of public school and go to because the religious schools were fully segregated.
Yeah, they didn't want them to be integration. And I think this is all very interesting because we had talked about how things are, you know, in a conversation that you and I had, that right now in the climate that we're in right now, that there's no segregation going on necessarily, but there it feels like we're reverting back to that time where things are, you know, and there are private schools now. I think even in Florida, they just had this whole thing where there's a private school so that they can, you know, again, reintroduce heavy religion into their curriculum and, you know, things of that nature. And
in my personal view, I think there's been a lot of what I would consider to be recidivism. You know, reverting back to the way things were back in the 50s, to some degree, it's a little strange for sure.
But it was scary. I mean, you think we take steps forward to, you know, hey, look, we all live and share in this world together. You know, as people, where no one, you know, and again, you know, we the people, all that kind of stuff. No one person is created differently from the other, and yet,
right?
You know, trying to find ways to make sure we remain divided in some level, and you would think now it's, you know, 2024.
Yeah,
you're talking 70 years has gone by since that desegregation,
right,
you know, ruling was made, and how, you know,
to some degree,
to some degrees, it hasn't really changed at all.
And it's, you know, it goes back, I think, to something you and I've talked about. I know I've talked, Mom and I have talked about it. It's, you know, it's, I think the whole thing is, even though, you know, this desegregation or integration, whatever you want to call it, is the law of the land. When you know, what kids, what people are taught in their family situation is, you know, you're brought up in your family. Your initial view of the world is coming from your parents.
Right.
And if your parents are, I don't want to say bigoted, but, you know, if your parents are locked in some type of certain views,
more the old
line views,
right?
Well, you're going to get those views. Those are the ones that you're going to be taught.
Absolutely.
And if a family holds the internal view that you know, blacks or Asians or any minority is a second class citizen, well, then you're going to be, that's what you're going to be taught, because that's what you're taught,
right,
you know, from your family. So it's you know, in our family, you know, we of course did not hold those views. You know, our views were, hey, listen, this is
everybody's
equal. Everybody is equal.
Absolutely.
And definitely we're holding those, not just holding that view, but promoting that view.
Right.
But you know, going back to Jayville, I think to some degree, even though we're showing love for Jayville because they did come along, move along, and do some positive steps from the segregation situation and other related situations. They're also, you know, part of the South, and it's more part of South Georgia. You know, people think of Florida as being, you know, all these people coming down from up north and, you know, making it more of a liberal, you know, community. But that's not really true. That's more true like in Dade County.
Right.
But really, South Florida. The northern, you know, the panhandle of Florida is a very, very, very conservative part of the state.
Yeah.
And remains that way.
Right.
So it still holds, even though I think in talking with most people, you would hear, well, of course we're integrated. We're an integrated population. You know, we don't refuse to serve people. You know, everybody's treated equal.
Well, yeah. I mean, things have not reverted back that far. And there's definitely, you know, major strides that have happened, you know, from even when I was growing up there. You know, but of course, there are still, you know, parts of the population you know, will always believe that the way it was is the way it should be forever, you know, and that's...
Well, I think, and the other thing is, even though there were these court cases, because of the fact that people were effectively segregated because of where they lived.
Right.
That you ended up with the segregation holding on until housing developments became desegregated. Like we lived in Deerwood.
Right.
And even though there might have been, you know, one or two Black families, I mean, Deerwood was actually didn't allow Jews either.
Right.
You know, part of their governing documents were restricted. There were no Blacks and no Hebrews allowed in Deerwood. So and there were court cases in the 60s, which, of course, knocked those deed restrictions down. But still,
was that part of the reason why we moved there? Was a little bit of the middle finger to the establishment? I think
we were the third Jewish family that moved to Deerwood.
Right.
The Gelmans were the first, and I think I can't remember who the second was, but we were the third Jewish family. So there were virtually no Jewish families in Deerwood. Of course, that changed, you know, significantly over time, but. I don't even know if there was a Black family in Deerwood, and to a large degree they were economically segregated because the cost of the housing itself.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I was like, just because this desegregation happened, it wasn't like, hey, we're going to desegregate and then give reparations for all of the things that we did so that you will now be an equal part of the community.
Yeah,
it's no. Here you go, and good luck.
Yeah, yeah.
Basically.
If you can afford it, then you want to move to Deerwood, yes, you can.
Right.
If you want to be the only Black family there, yes, you can.
But not only that, I mean, it's just like, you know,
But would you want to?
No, but I mean, I don't even know how to say it. It's just, like you're saying, they were already... shouldn't say they, but it seems like the Black community was already at an economic disadvantage just because of the way they were segregated.
Oh, of course.
So then to desegregate doesn't all of a sudden fix the economic disparity between classes or between races, excuse me. So therefore, so it's not, again, it wasn't just like, okay, everything's been fixed. You know, we desegregated, so now it's we're all good now, right? No, it's not that.
No,
because way more than that.
Because you've got all these families that, you know, the families at the time of desegregation were the parents of these families were raised in these separate but equal schools, which were clearly not equal,
right.
You know, so their education was substantially of a lower quality than the white kids. So they were not just economically, they were from an educational perspective, were on the lower end of the hook as well.
Right.
And so they were at a disadvantage for a long period of time.
Still are.
Yeah. I mean, there were programs, I think, that were pushed at the federal level, you know, where kids were, you know, there were attempts, you know, to put kids into programs where they kick-started or jump-started these kids so that they would get at least a better, because you are taught, I mean, you know, your initial teaching is in your home.
Right.
So depending on how your parents were educated, you know, that's so all of this is leading to this long, long, long lead time before Black families even started to move up the ladder on from an educational perspective.
Right.
So it's they go hand in hand. The economic capability is directly related to the educational capability. So that was all part and parcel of the way things were operated. I mean, when I talk to people, you know, friends that grew up north, you know, that like people that I knew from Philly that went to school in Philly, even though schools were integrated in Philadelphia,
right?
There was still segregation, you know, effective segregation because of where people lived. You know, there were not necessarily ghettos, but there were, you know, mainly Black areas of the city. And of course, the schools that were there were mainly Black. Yeah. They were predominantly Black schools. That being said, I remember talking to my cousins. I mean, they clearly had Black kids in the high schools.
Right.
So they had at least had the opportunity to go to school in an integrated situation. Sure. Whereas in Florida, that just wasn't the case. I never
it
had.
When I was growing up, it was the case.
And yeah, you had the opportunity, mm-hmm. But I didn't. And Harold, my brother, certainly didn't have the opportunity. So it took a long time. It really did take a long time. And it obviously it's still in process because it ain't equal.
No.
It's just not.
But, so we love Jacksonville.
Well, I think Jacksonville, you know, I mean, Jacksonville is, I find when I talk to people, you know, that are in what I consider to be, you know, top management positions with companies, you know, significant companies. And, you know, you talk about Jacksonville. I mean, Jacksonville gets high marks, mainly because it's a golfer's town.
You know, right.
So golf is a big deal. The other thing that's unfortunate about Jacksonville is it's got the worst school system in the entire state. It's absolutely ranked last.
Right.
But St. Johns County, which is adjacent
yeah.
to Duval County, is ranked number one in the state.
Right.
So the area that Jacksonville's Northeast Florida is an area that is attracting businesses, companies. So the growth from the growth standpoint, Jacksonville is growing pretty well.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, the school system I've never been able to figure out why the school system is just not able to pull itself out, and why St. Johns County that's just right there is all the way at the other end of the spectrum. But I guess it comes down to the school board. It's just the way they run the schools and the way they allocate, you know, the state budget the state Florida allocates a certain amount per student, and then it's up to the school boards
right.
to decide how that money's going to be spent.
Was it always, was the school system that way when you were in school there? Was it considered a really poor school system? And not by poor, I mean,
Well, I think it would depend on the school. Considering that the high schools were still segregated.
Right.
You know, I went to DuPont, which was considered, DuPont and Landon were considered good schools. I mean, there were a very limited number of high schools. I mean, right. It was Jackson, Lee, DuPont, Landon. I think there were probably like six or seven big high schools in Jacksonville, maybe a couple more. But they were just, I think for the most part, they weren't anything to write home about.
Right.
Although I felt,
because I know it was terrible when I was in the school system.
Yeah, there.
I know.
I thought I got really a good. I even though I was a terrible student, I think I had the opportunity. I think the curriculum and the teachers that I had at DuPont were very good.
Right.
I think that was also true at Landon, where Mom went. Jackson was on the north side of Jacksonville, so probably, I would say probably the quality at Jackson maybe wasn't that great. Lee was decent. You know, it was a good school. That was the west side of Jacksonville. But I wouldn't say that, I don't think Jacksonville's school system even back then was ranked anything special. That's for sure. But it didn't hinder me. I hindered myself. It was
sure.
It was made available. The teachers were good. The curriculum was decent. And I could have easily done very well with my high school degree in college had I applied myself. So I think the schools that were given the opportunity by the school board probably, did a decent job providing an education.
Gotcha.
But there were, Bowles, as the big time private school in Jacksonville, Bowles was considered to be, a top tier private school.
Right.
And nationwide, I think, from that standpoint. But it's always, unfortunately, lag behind. But from an amenity standpoint, a place to live, when you consider that the beaches are there, from an outside perspective, it's a paradise. I mean,
yeah.
Literally.
No, it's really an attractive
beautiful,
place.
Beautiful places to live. The recreational opportunities, the Intracoastal Waterway, the beaches, as I say, it's a gorgeous, it's a wonderful place to live. And I think for the most part, people that move down from up north or that move to the Duval County or that multi-county area of Clay County,
St. John's, and
St. John's, Nassau. It's a beautiful place to live. It really is. It's a cool from a natural amenity standpoint, and it's slowly but surely culturally it's growing, and I think these big changes that are occurring with the downtown area. Mm. That's where things have always lagged. Jacksonville's downtown is just terrible. I mean, from the standpoint of amenities,
right?
There's just all the great restaurants are located elsewhere.
Yep.
And there's not even a place to. I think there's one relatively small grocery store downtown. So it's changing because they're putting in. What Shad Khan, the guy that owns the Jaguars,
right,
is part of the push to put in condos, high-rise condos there, and start looking at developing areas of the city to put in housing developments and that, so that the downtown can be revitalized,
right?
And I think they're working on that. At least they're trying.
All right,
that's where the Jayville that I know is. They're trying their best. I guess.
As we are with our love letter.
Yeah. There you go.
Hey, to all of our listeners in Jacksonville, we love you guys.
Yeah.
And
Jacksonville holds a fond place in my heart.
Yes.
Yeah.
Look, your daughter and son were born there. And
they were.
You met your wife there. So.
Well, you mean my daughter... My daughter was not born there.
Oh, that's true.
She was born in Philadelphia.
Yes, grew up there.
But,
you're right.
But yeah, but she basically grew up there. Yeah.
Sorry, forgot about that.
Yep. That's you almost could have been born in St. Petersburg.
Oh.
But nope, we moved back to Jayville. But so all ends right. our follow-up to Jayville.
Maybe we'll revisit it with an actual love letter next time.
Yeah. something like that.
Well, this is an amazing start to our second season.
Yeah, I hope so.
And look forward to talking to you even more.
Yes, with casual chats.
Casual chats, the soothing patter.
That's right.
In your life.